So this is John Costa, and we're recording this week's Spotlight on Arts. I'm here with Rob Watson. How are you this week, Rob?
I'm very well, thank you, John.
Here we go. Here we go again. Deja vu, isn't it? Every week's deja vu. And now we went to an event the other week, didn't we, on Jubilee Square. Tell me what that was.
The Leicester Communities Together Information Festival.
Fantastic. And I went there with full expectations of having a look around and got squirreled away in a little gazebo interviewing lots of people, like Lydia Towsey came, and I've not spoken to Lydia for God knows how many years. So got to meet lots of old friends, I guess, from the Citizen's Eye days as well.
And you can relive all of those conversations on the Source Sound website because they're up as podcasts.
Oh, really? Oh, there you go. I didn't know that. And I'm helping co-host this with Rob. So one of the conversations that we're going to have off the back of that, actually, and I'm sure there'll be many, and I know lots of people are fed back about conversations with Helen from the Evington Echo, who was there that day going around interviewing people. And she spoke to someone called Dave Bushby, who is the team manager of the Leicestershire Carers Support Service within Age UK, the gaffer, team manager. And ironically, I had messaged someone I knew from years ago called Ray Gandy on LinkedIn, and he said, oh, I can't come on, John. He said, but I've got someone that came. Got someone to come on. Dave, the manager, do you mind if he comes? And we've just been talking on the lift on the way coming. And actually, it was Dave that Helen interviewed. So here we are. We've closed the circle. It does work, Leicester, that village masquerading as a city. So Dave, welcome. Good to see you. Thanks for coming in and talking to us today. And like I said, it's Spotlight on Art, so it's quite broad. So I'm not going to ask you about your interest in art or name the top 10 artists of the last 35 years. But I guess just give us an overview of what you guys do at the Leicester Carers Support Service, you know, just in a couple of sentences, and then we'll get into sort of talking to you about team manager and stuff. And for me, I guess with Spotlight on Art, it's going to be very much around activities for carers, not necessarily to do with the people they care, but actually carers' well-being themselves. So come on, dive in. What do you guys get up to?
So as I say, I manage the carer support service. We're based at Clarence House in the city centre, and we offer a range of services for unpaid carers across the city of Leicester who are over age of 18. And we run regular support groups for carers to come, so we can do one-to-one support, group support, peer support, that sort of thing. We run outings, day trips, those sort of things.
So how many unpaid carers would you say there were? I mean, is it one of those things that's actually quite hard to measure because most people wouldn't even consider themselves to be a carer? They just look after someone.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, like I say, I think, you know, as we spoke about earlier, you know, most people, you know, if they find themselves in a caring role, it's sort of, you know, they don't identify themselves as a carer. You know, or the, you know, it's expectation, perhaps, you know, family expectation or cultural expectation. But it's very hard to say, really. I mean, I think at the moment we have around 3,000 or 4,000 people registered with our service. Wow. They don't all use it at the same time. But
so someone that's been in touch, met you at an event or has requested some information or something like that, 3,000 to 4,000
people. Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
I mean, when you think about what's the population of Leicester now, Rob? It's about 375,000. 75,000.
Or probably a bit more, actually, now.
So if there's 3,000 or 4,000 people that have reached out for information, you can guarantee that it's probably less than half. Now, Rob and I have been, you know, I've talked to him since we've been doing these podcasts about, you know, my dad passing away last July. My parents have lived with me for the last sort of, you know, 12, 13 years. So now this is like me and my mum. So, you know, am I an unpaid carer? I don't know. Probably. I mean, it depends, you know, what's that level of care? If you're there sharing responsibility with something and you've got an overview on someone else's well-being, and I'm sure she would look at it from the point of view that when she cooks dinner, she's doing exactly the same for me. But it's one of those things, isn't it? It's not necessarily someone who is medically ill. Sometimes it's just someone that needs your help or support or a bit of advice. I mean, these are the kind of people that you're coming across as well.
That's right. Yeah. So it's just normal everyday people, you know, and again, sort of, if you provide support for somebody, you know, a friend, relative, neighbor, somebody that you know, even if it's just for 1 hour a week, then you are a carer. That's sort of definition of what a carer is. And it could be, you know, just assist with some shopping, bit of cleaning, that sort of thing, up to full, you know, being a full-time carer for that person.
So, Dave, let's just pick up on something you said there in one of your, like a bit of a throwaway at the end of one of your comments there, or halfway through, actually. You were saying about if you look after, you know, or help out a neighbour. go and get their shopping as well. So imagine if you were to say to someone, you are an unpaid carer, what does that mean? They'd instantly think about being maybe a young carer or, you know, caring for an elderly parent and stuff, not looking out for a neighbour or, you know, just being one of those people that's just a good community orientated person. So, I mean, out of those 3,000 to 4,000 people, I mean, I'm not after a sort of a pie chart of it, but, you know, when you gauge it, when you meet people, when you're talking to people at like the Jubilee Square event, what sort of things are they saying to you? Is it more about they want information that they're unaware of? Sometimes is it support? Is it finance? Is it just somewhere for them to go to have a conversation with someone?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of all of what you just said, really. Sometimes it is just somebody to talk to, you know, if it, you know, the finance, because yeah, being a carer is can be quite a very stressful situation for them to be in. So really just somebody to talk to that's not related to them and somebody they can confide in, I think it helps them. I think
so. I mean, things like you were talking about trips as well, you know, the kind of trips that you run. So who goes on those trips? Are they people that are looking for a little bit of respite because someone's at school or someone's at in hospital and they're looking to look after themselves?
It's just people that are, you know, probably more in like a full-time caring role. And it's just really to give them a chance to be away from that for perhaps for a day or for a few hours, you know, just to give them something to think about other than, you know, caring for the loved one.
And I guess it's also someone's mental health and well-being as well, isn't it? Because it's like you're looking after someone else. You're not necessarily putting yourself first and therefore looking after yourself.
Yeah, and that's true. I think, you know, most people don't consider that, you know, it's always about, you know, I need to look after this person, you know, but then they forget about looking after themselves. And I think their health and well-being is just as important as those they're caring for, because without that, then they can't carry on.
Yeah. So let's just dive into sort of some other areas as well. I mean, how are you viewed, do you think, not you as an individual, but the service that you provide by people like GPs and the NHS? Is it like, you know, thank heavens that you're there, otherwise they wouldn't be able to deliver that kind of thing?
Yeah, I think so. As I say, you know, we work quite closely with health GP surgeries. We have a lot of contact with GP surgeries in the city because they have social prescribers that now that are attached to them, and they travel around, and quite often we get referrals from them asking for support, you know, different types of support, really sort of benefits advice, referrals onto adult social care for other types of support as well, emotional support, that sort of thing.
So what's a social prescriber? I've heard of that term several times. Actually, if I was to turn around and go, oh, what do you do as a social prescriber? Because I'll never meet one. I guess I'll never get to question them, so I'm going to pick on you. What do they do in a very broad definition?
I think, obviously, they're based within GP surgeries, and they travel within, if there's a group of surgeries, they'll travel around. And I think they sort of triage, really. So rather than necessarily a GP or health-related issue that they have to see GP for, they can speak to this person who can then either signpost elsewhere or refer to organisations like ourselves.
I guess also that fits really well with that, Rob, doesn't it? With that sort of medical model and the social model, where the medical model is more about sort of, you know, condition you have, whereas the social model is about, you know, what, where are you going?
Yeah,
who are you hanging out with? What are you doing?
A lot of long-term beneficial responses to try and not medicalize people. So it's not about giving people pills. So, you know, a lot of depression, and it sounds like I don't want to be trite about it, but a lot of depression, obviously people do have medical needs, but it can be about physical activity, changes of diet, changes of your community. You know, if you're caught up in a toxic community, that can be damaging. And it's about that kind of social well-being. So the social prescription model is broader than just looking at things of here's a pill or here's an injection. And it's about saying, you know, what's the other provision that you can take part in? What kinds of activities that you can take part in? Because there's just so much evidence that a good, positive social life prevents ill health and contributes to recovery from ill health. And just taking a medicalized view of this. And I think that's one of the changes with the, you know, where Streeton is saying, as I said, the NHS has got to become a wellness service, not a recovery service from ill health.
So, Dave, we were talking previously, Rob and I, on a recording that we were doing for our Spotlight on Heritage show where we were talking about National Sporting Heritage Day coming up on Tuesday, the 30th of September, and about community sports, people participating in sports and that kind of, you know, you can imagine being an unpaid carer out walking with someone maybe in a kind of mobility vehicle or a wheelchair, and you're going through the local park and there's, you know, a group of people participating in some kind of sport. The impact that that has on people's well-being is, you know, I'm enjoying watching it. It might be a nice day. You know, it's being out. It's something to stop and dwell rather than just doing my steps around the park to be healthy. And maybe even thinking about, you know, it's an opportunity for a carer to talk to the person they're supporting about, you know, did they participate in sport themselves before they got into this needing care role? What kind of things do people talk to you about when they come to your drop-ins? It must be, it's almost like, you probably, give me an example. You can't pin it down, I know, but, you know.
Yeah, it's just a range of things. It is a range of things. Just various things, really. Sometimes it's about, you know, financial advice that they're looking for. Sometimes it is about, you know, well-being and, you know, being able to get out and about, services that can help with that. One of the groups that we do run is and it's a once a month group, and it's actually a walking group, which is on Victoria Park. So on the first Saturday of every month, there's a group of carers that meet up, have a walk around Victoria Park for a couple of hours, and then they all go for a coffee afterwards, and it's really just a good opportunity.
I've seen them.
Okay.
That's what that group of people were that were walking around on a Saturday. Absolutely. They look the complete opposite of British military fitness that are up there getting beasted by someone who looks like he just wants to shout at people while wearing his combat trousers and his boots. So that's what these people are. They're just a group of people that are out, something social, it's something for them, and then they're going for a coffee.
Yeah, yeah. They are, as I say, they are unpaid carers, you know, and they all meet up. You know, it's facilitated by, you know, a member of our team and volunteers as well. And then they all meet up and they get out in the fresh air, yeah, take a dog for a walk and just have a chat, really.
Well, let's talk about this kind of disgraceful, unnecessary evil that we have in the fact that money and funding and you know, how things work. I mean, how is your service funded? Is it something that's core to what Age UK does? Is it through sort of contracts with the NHS and things like that? Or is it come from sort of volunteering and fundraising and things?
So my particular service, the care support service, is actually commissioned by Leicester City Council. So this particular project is funded for three years, and it actually started in July last year. So that was the start of the new contract. So yeah, the funding comes from them. Okay. But in the wider picture, Age UK is obviously funded by different streams, lottery funding, charity, though for the charity itself, you know, fundraising, local businesses, that sort of thing.
I wonder if you went out and did a straw poll of people now, Rob, at the clock tower, how many people would think that maybe Age UK was just a really fancy branded name for that part of the NHS. They don't realise that it's actually something that's additional to it and is something that's funded. We don't really understand where the money comes from.
Well, I suppose we're getting close to being within the orbit of Age UK, and you know, kind of both of us are of a certain age.
Ouch.
Now.
Yeah.
I tried to do that as gently as I could, but
I'm 59 and going south. Not
but
going
it is like the, you know, kind of perceptions of when do you need it? You know, when do you need support, advice to manage and cope with the changes that age bring about? And we have such a focus on self-reliance in the UK that asking for help and being part of a social provision of help is either seen, it's seen as if you need to go to a group to ask for help from somebody like Age UK. I'm being very over stereotypical about this, but it's seen as kind of like you've failed in some way. So people will battle and struggle because they want to maintain their sense of individual. I mean, a guy lives, he's in his 90s and lives in the flats where my mum lives. And he doesn't, he's got money to have a cleaner, but he won't bring in a cleaner because it's like he sees it as, you know, he's too proud.
He's failed, yeah. Yeah.
And how do you get over those challenges of kind of people's perceptions of it's not like a handout, it's something that you is what we want to do is to provide and support and help people.
Yeah, sure. It's very difficult. You know, we are faced with that quite often. You know, we'll sometimes get a family member or carer ringing up, say, look, you know, my mom and my dad needs that support, but they're very against it. They're very reluctant. And I think sometimes it's about, you know, being proud, like you say, and, you know, and they just want to carry on. But I think if we can, you know, for us, we try and work with those people. And we don't, sometimes we'll go out and meet with them as well and just have a chat with them, see if we can change their minds, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, if they need some support, then really they should get it. Again, our actual service, you know, the care support service is free. So, you know, any advice that we can give doesn't cost anybody anything. I think it's pretty important.
So, Dave, let's have a sort of shine a light on you a little bit. So, how do you even get into being, you know, the gaffer, the team manager for a support service of Age UK? How did you arrive at this point, or do we need a completely different podcast to talk about that?
No, I don't think so. for many, many years, for the last sort of, prior to working for Age UK, for the last 20 years, I've worked in both the health and social care sectors within the city. I've managed services across the city, again, actually for care services, rather than supporting unpaid carers. And it came to a point in my life where I felt I needed a change. I've done it for such a long time. Didn't quite know what I wanted to do. So I just decided to take some time off, and then I'd look around. And then obviously I saw this job was available. So I applied, and the rest is history.
And what's the best thing about the job compared to what you used to do before, when it was like paid carers doing unpaid carers? Do you feel like a bit like a poacher turned gamekeeper, but you know the inside rules and the track?
Yeah, a little bit, because I have some inside knowledge of how, you know, I talk about, you know, some of the systems, how they work. It doesn't give me, you know, all the ways in, but I have some context still that I can, you know, speak to, call upon.
And it feels like navigating the system sometimes, rather than getting an answer that you need immediately. It's like, how do you navigate the system to get closer to where the information
is? Yeah, very much so. I mean, most of, you know, people do call us, you know, they find it so frustrating. They don't know who to speak to, how to get in there. And quite often, you know, there's a bit of a barrier put up towards them. So when they come to us, you know, we can sort of say, well, actually, you know, we can do this for you. And then we'll, you know, we'll make some initial contacts and then put them in touch with the right people.
Mm. What's success for you? What does success look like for what you do on a day-to-day basis? Is it a mere fact that you still are able to close the doors at the end of a work day on a service that is needed, and that you know it can open again tomorrow so you can keep going? Just to be there for people?
Yeah, I definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've, you know, for say, worked with people for a long time now, and I like working with people. And I like to think that, you know, in some, even if it's just a small way, that I made some their difference to somebody, even if it's just to somebody's call up and, you know, offload to us, really. And you know, I think that's really important.
I mean, do you think when you're personal question now, when you're going to be on the receiving end of receiving care from someone, do you feel like, you know, we're in a good place when it comes to the kind of services that are there, or is it something where there's always room for improvement? Or
I think there's always room for improvement. I think over the last, I'm afraid, last 20, 25 years, you know, the funding side of things is, for the local authorities is reduced. You know, there's always cutbacks, savings being required. And I think that some of the services, the paid services and free services, you know, are just not there, really. There's not enough, which is a shame, really, because I'm pretty sure there is a need for people to be able to, you know, get support.
Mm-hmm. Are you constantly having to battle and give people stats about what you do, as in like there's a need for it? Because they're just like, oh, you know, there can't be a need. People just look after people. Whereas you're saying, well, actually, no, it's important that this provision is there.
Yeah, we do. As part of the, you know, the part of the funding that we have with the local authority, you know, we have to produce some quarterly stats of, you know, people that we've helped, new people that we've helped, sort of groups, support groups that we've ran, that sort of thing, types of support we've given. And we do that on a regular basis. And I think as an organisation, I know, like, obviously, you know, CEO Tony Donovan, he fights on a local and the national level.
And Tony Donovan's still the CEO. Oh, tell him you met John Costa from Citizens Eye. And John said, are you still there? I can remember having a table down there, I think, at Clarence House for a couple of older persons' months, which used to be September, still older persons' month, is it? Or have we moved on from picking on older people for an entire month now? I'm not quite sure.
I mean, November coming up is Carers' Rights Day in November, 21st of November. It was Carers' Week back in June, so.
And are those kind of things important, do you think, to have those? A bit like National Volunteer Week, they're weeks to shine a spotlight on good stuff that people do.
Yeah, definitely. I think that, you know, like I say, without, you know, having those types of events, those types of days, you know, people are just forgotten about and not recognised, you know.
Yeah, it just kind of disappears and might get mentioned in Pride of Britain awards.
Yeah. So it's important that, you know, we support people to feel part of something and actually, you know, they are needed and they are recognised.
So Dave, for this final section, this interrogation that you've had here on Spotlight on Arts, what kind of activities do you run for? You mentioned about, you know, day trips and things like that. Do you run sort of arts and crafts and those kind of things for people?
Yeah, we do. So we have a weekly arts and crafts group that we hold on a Wednesday morning. We do other sorts of things, activities. We do mindfulness, meditation. We also have people come in from different services to do talks to people. We had a local bank in the other week to talk about scams and fraud with the carers there, because that's quite interesting. We have lots of people coming in from the local authority. They give talks as well. We had National Institute for the Deaf. They came in and did some talks again about tinnitus, and they also did some 3-year-end tests while they were there. So we involved, we got a lot of people going.
Well, I'm up for coming in and doing a talk for you as well, and talking about sort of maybe people capturing their own memories from a heritage perspective, sort of oral histories and stuff, sharing things. That could be quite interesting. I mean, do you have people that volunteer for you as well?
We do have some volunteers. Yeah. There's a couple of volunteers within my particular service. And I think there are some volunteers within the wider Age UK services as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Just, I think it's about people just being aware. So how would someone get in touch with you? Is it through like a website? Is there like, you know, a telephone number? Kind of do a bit of promo for us in case someone's listening now thinking, yep, I feel I've identified myself as an unpaid carer and I think Dave and his team could help me.
Yeah, so there's a few ways really. Obviously, you can give us a call on 0116 222 0538 or by email, and that's carers@ageuklics.org.uk, or if you're passing by, pop into Clarence House and see us.
So what's that marvellous glass building that you've got built there? I'm sure, how many times have people asked you that? What is that marvellous glass thing that's appeared on it?
Well, that's actually called the Bradbury Centre. And it's actually, I think, some money made available to build it. And it was really for it to be a resource centre, benefits advice centre for anybody really just to pop in, you know, have a chat with the advisors in there, benefits advice, form filling, that sort of thing. Again, signpost. We have all the Age UK information and brochures that they produce that's available. So, you know, people should come in.
Marvellous. So how big is your team, Dave?
My particular team, it's only a small team. So there's another 6 people apart from myself, and they're mainly carer support workers, but we also have a one lady who's I have 2 ladies actually who are dedicated benefits advisors. So, you know, they're up to date with all the changes in legislation and can advise people.
So will you be encouraging them to listen to your first ever podcast?
Yeah, I will.
Participation.
I will. Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Maybe we can speak to one of them as well, get them to come along and just share what they do. Because I think it's really important, isn't it? People don't necessarily think of maybe your career, what you've done. I mean, you've just been in this sector for, you know, your whole working life, and here you are running a team now. And it's, you know, we talk about different careers and people think, well, NHS, maybe doctors and all that. But this kind of lower level mass involvement of people caring for people particularly, I think it's one of those things, you know.
Yeah, it is. And I think without it, you know, the rest of it wouldn't work. You know, there is a need for it. But you talked about care, you know, that's one of the carers coming in. And I think it's really important. So what carer stories, you know, real carer stories is really important. And if people can share that, you know, I think it's a really good thing.
Well, let's come down to one of your drop-in sessions on a Wednesday morning, maybe the arts and crafts one. We can bring some of our colouring skills along and encourage people to just capture their content maybe and see where we go from there. That'd be quite cool. Spotlight on caring or spotlight on volunteering or something like that. I'm sure we can start something. We're always up for doing something new. So Dave, thanks very much for joining Rob and I today.
All right, John. Thank you. Thanks for having me.